And my name is Joshua Rivera.
And today we'll be interviewing you, Josh. You are currently in RBT and you are in ABA school to become a BCBA. I know there's so many acronyms. Let me just first.
Sorry, no. I was laughing there at ABA school. Like it's a special school where all we do is ABA.
Right. No, I mean, I guess it was the better way of saying this was that he's getting a graduate degree in applied behavior analysis. It's just so much easier to say ABA school.
Some people say like a master's degree.
I feel like telling you, like I'm telling everybody, he's in boarding school. Like he's in ABA school. You won't see him for years. He'll come back though. Yeah.
It was really prestigious to make it into ABA school, so. All right, yes, but I am finishing up my degree from Arizona State. I'm going for my master's in special education with a focus on applied behavior analysis, and afterwards I'll be testing for the BCBA, or to become a BCBA, so I'll join your ranks there, and that's where I am at.
Yeah, I forget that there's like also like master's degrees and so many other fields you could be in to become a BCBA. You know, the field is changing constantly, and the requirements are changing as well with it.
You know, yeah, you remind me of a BCBA that I used to know, who she got her bachelor's in interior design. She had a bachelor's in interior design before she was like, okay, I'm going to go get my master's in special education, and then became a BCBA. So, obviously, I come from a background where it's not interior design. It was it was psychology based, but I just think it's really interesting. Yeah, when I first heard that, I was like, how did you pivot into this career? And I never got a straight answer from her. But yeah, it's interesting that you brought up like that you have so many paths to becoming a BCBA.
Yeah, it's amazing how, like, open the field is currently. Like the things that you require are pretty minimal compared to other parallel fields like OT and PT and speech, but I think it's also because it's a newer field, so they're slowly tightening up that a little bit.
Yeah, like defining what it's gonna be, so mm-hmm. I have no doubt that in 10 years, the requirements to become a BCBA are going to be much more drastically different than what they are currently.
Yeah. So, I guess we can begin on these questions I have for you.
All right.
So, how long have you been in the field of ABA, and what got you started?
Well, this is actually one of my favorite points about how I made it into here, because I had no idea what ABA was before basically leaving college or for leaving my undergrad. So I always like this story because I've been able to convert a lot of people over to ABA.
Convert.
Like honestly, it's like a mission of mine. I go through and I tell them like, okay, hey, you're working in a field where you work with a underserved population, it's loosely psychology based, and you hate your job, so why not, you know, come join us where it's, you know, it's got all these things loosely psychology based, I'm trying to think of the right word for I guess underserved community as well, and you can go ahead and join us and switch your career over, and you'd have no idea what you started off with here. So I've had people who were nurses switch over and join, become RBTs. I had a friend who was a social worker. She actually pivoted her whole master's career because she was getting a master's to do social work, and she was like, wow, I actually really hate this, and I don't want to do social work for the rest of my life. And she pivoted it over to ABA. And I believe she works at the company that we work at now.
Wow. Like, what made them want to be an ABA?
Well, what made them want to be an ABA was the same reason that they wanted to be in their other jobs. They wanted to help out people and help them in a mental capacity, because they, you know, like I said, they were social workers and mental health nurses before, and being able to explain and say, look, you get in here and you completely change this family's life, and it's you see the results pretty much every day. It's not a transitory position, you know. It's not a, like, people just kind of show up and leave and then they're gone forever. You know, like social work cases, they kind of, you know, move between states, or mental health patients come and go and they don't really stay around. With ABA, that's one of my favorite parts about it, is that I'll look back and be like, 6 months ago, this kid was punching me in the face every day, and now that's not the case anymore. Yeah. So
it's good to see progress, you know, especially punching in the face, that when that decreases. But yes, like, overall, there are a lot of behaviors that change throughout, because we are behavior therapists, and so seeing that improvement, I can imagine, makes people want to be in this field, want to stay in this field.
Yeah, and I mean, so that's what ended up getting me to get back to the original question. So I've been in the field for 5 years, and like I said, when I left university, I had no idea what ABA was. I'd taken one class about behavioral psychology during my psychology undergrad, and I got out of the field. I was working at Budget Car Rentals as a customer service guy, and I hated it. I had my degree, and I was doing absolutely nothing with it. There was a whole bunch of surrounding circumstances. I needed to keep this job because I had just moved out with my future wife and a roommate, and so I had to keep this job, even though I did not want to at all. So after about a month and a half there, I was like, okay, I need to get out. I need to get out of here, and I need to do something with my degree. So I went and started looking up jobs that used a psychology degree. That's all I did. I went onto Indeed, and I typed in psychology degree jobs. And I was looking through the jobs, and I was just kind of applying to everything that was easy. I honestly couldn't tell you what I applied for, because it was there was an instant apply route to do, and it was all right, if you put your resume on and you just hit this button, you'll go ahead and apply for the job. And I was like, cool, that's about as much energy as I have to look for a new job anyways. And so I ended up getting a job, or I ended up getting an interview at this ABA company, and they were like, you're gonna work with kids, and these kids have autism, and you're gonna help make their social behaviors better. I was like,
Did you know your job description before your first day there, or were you seriously just given, you didn't know, you came into this empty room and somebody walks in and says, this is your mission, this is your job?
Yeah. Yeah, they just came in black suits and they
give you a file folder.
No, there was an interview process, and they told me, okay, well, you're going to be working pretty intensively with these kids. And I was like, that's cool and all. They told me an hourly rate that was way higher than my retail job. And I was like, yep, but I'm going to let you know right now, it was $14. It was $14 an hour to go ahead and do ABA work.
It's amazing how many other jobs, just sales jobs, and, you know, any job that you come out of during college or maybe even after college, that pays so low, and people hold these jobs for years.
Yeah, no. So I was making $9.50 an hour at Budget, and then I switched over to this other company and I was making $14, and I was like, wow, I am so rich. I'm so set. And I wasn't. I was not at all. But you know, over time I worked my way up. But so I joined in at $14 an hour, and I had some of the worst cases that I'd ever had in my life. It was all in homework. So I went to these cases, and again, so 5 years ago in Las Vegas, the field was not very developed out here.
Yeah, I remember that for sure.
You know, most people that I find in ABA out here in Las Vegas, if they were working before 2016, they say that they were working in another state before coming to Las Vegas and finding this kind of field. But before 2016, I mean, I have no idea what the state of the employment looked like, but I know that it's much better now. So I joined in, and I had these parents. These parents didn't, they didn't care about session. They didn't care about if I showed up. They didn't really respect what an RBT or a BCBA was. The whole time, I really had no clue what I was doing, because it was like the very start of my ABA career. And I know I made like a million mistakes everywhere.
Oh, same for me. I feel like many, many people can relate on that.
So then I didn't stick around with that company for too long, and I actually ended up getting out of ABA because I was like, wow, that doesn't seem like it's going to be a field that's really well developed and ready to go. But, you know, I think I left that job like 6 months in. I was looking around at other psychology-based jobs. I was doing stuff like BST for a bit, basic skills training, and PSR. I forget what PSR stands for, but I was doing that for like 2 months. And psychosocial rehabilitation is what that one is.
Okay.
And yeah, and they were basically all fancier terms for doing ABA, just a little less defined, I would say. You know, they didn't really have clear goals and behavior plans and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know too much about psychosocial rehabilitation. What, can you tell a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so it was more mentalistic than like ABA, because you had to quantify how, I guess, appropriate behaviors were in context. So like I worked with kids that were like part of the criminal justice system, and working to make sure that they didn't go back into jail, essentially. You know, so I didn't make any behavior plans to be like, all right, you got to stop using hard drugs. I was just mostly there to kind of quantify and find out why they felt the need to use hard drugs in the first place. Again, this job fell apart so quickly. So it wasn't until I actually ended up in a clinic, an ABA clinic, that I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a real shot. And so by complete chance, that BCBA that I was talking about that had the interior design bachelor's, she worked with me on my first company. The first company went under shortly after I had left, and then when I came to apply for this clinic, that BCBA was also working at this clinic completely by chance. So like when I applied, the clinical director was like, all right, you're Josh. I was like, yep. And she was like, you know this BCBA? And I was like, yep. And she was like, all right, you've got the job, because she's already told me about you.
Oh, that's nice. Like,
yeah. And I was like, okay, cool, I'll go ahead and join. And stuck around for that. So it wasn't until I had that solid setting that I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a real shot. So, yeah.
Nice.
The original answer, 5 years.
Okay. How long were you in that clinic for?
I was at that clinic for close to 2 years, actually. Okay. I was at that clinic for close to 2 years. One of the other things that like people got to know about this field is that it's still developing, and as such, there's stuff that we can all improve on. I ended up leaving that clinic over ethical concerns for RBTs. So that's another one of those big things that kind of isn't talked about in our field is that RBT rights are not that great. You got a lot of chances for abuse of your position when you start out here. So I had been working there, and there were so many instances where management just did not properly treat RBTs well, and they operated under the assumption that you can just go ahead and replace them, you know? I mean, even today, I don't see it so much because I've kind of earned that seniority. But people will still treat RBTs as replaceable because, you know, all you need is a high school degree to go ahead and get started on it. But I don't think a lot of companies realize just how important it is to hire, you know, people that have been in this field and kind of nurture that and make them want to stay in the field. RBT rights being denied, but also, you know, our field has super high turnover because, you know, these people leave, they don't get the proper education to be doing this job. And so instead of getting help from the clinic's just like, hey, figure it out. And the RBT is like, okay, yeah, I figured it out. I'm quitting. So I think that's a really big goal, actually, as a BCBA, when I finally become that role, is that I want to target those RBTs who are like, well, I don't really know what I'm doing here. And me saying, okay, well, here's what it is. Here's what you're going to be doing. Here's what it's like. Here's some of the experiences that I've had. And really making it so that if they don't know why they're an RBT in the first place, well, give them a reason to be like, okay, I should stick out with this career for the time being. So.
Wow. Yeah, it is so important to value the RBTs because the path that they get into, the path that we've gone into, it's very difficult. It is such a struggle, and you know, everybody is different and everybody has behaviors, and we all have to learn to adjust to different ones. What may work for one person may not work for the other, and so you learn all of these things throughout the years. And on top of that, you know, there's so many cancellations that occur because of vacations, sick time, holidays, whatever it is. And then the more often than not, the RBTs don't get paid. So they're often, you know, only working a few hours here and there, or they're working so many hours to make sure that they can afford, that they can make a living.
Yeah, no, agreed. One of the big changes that I hope to see in my tenure as an RBT is a bigger, well, not, I guess not as an RBT, because I won't be an RBT for much longer, but one of the bigger changes that I'm hoping for is actual cancellation policies being used for insurances and stuff like that, so that if clients get canceled on, usually with less than 24-hour notice, that the RBT gets some sort of compensation for that, because, like, that's not their fault. It's not the RBT's fault that they couldn't show up to work. They were planning on going, but then, you know, cancellations happened. So I think that's just one of the main things that I'd want to see going forward for RBT rights, but that's it, kind of neither here nor there. I feel like that's a completely different beast.
Yeah. All right. Well, what do you say is one common myth about the field of ABA that you want to debunk?
One of the common myths that I found about ABA, I find that a lot of people still think that it's, like, we make robots. We make people that can go ahead and just respond to very mm-hmm. specific stimuli and can only function under those ways. So it's not like that at all. I think there's definitely instances where, yeah, people have messed up and suddenly this kid can only say one phrase back to you for whatever you just said, and they say it the exact same way, exact same tone, everything like that. But that's not, you know, if you do that and you just leave it there, then you've done a bad job at ABA, because you haven't tackled the main issue of making the kid more acceptable to a society, or the client more acceptable into a society. And again, it's not even just about kids, it would be about for any practice of ABA, because, you know, there's so much focus on kind of the ABC of things, where the A has a one-to-one with a certain antecedent, and the B has a one-to-one, and the C has the one-to-one.
What does one-to-one mean? What do you mean?
I mean, like, the with the consequence, or whatever the specific antecedent is the only time that this behavior and everything is going to work out that same way. So imagine, like, you teach a kid the steps to buying their own stuff from, like, a 7-Eleven, and then you take him to a grocery store and he suddenly has no idea what to do. Like, that's the fact that you don't have the transfer. I'm trying to think the generativity. Yeah, generalization of it. And so if you haven't taught a kid to generalize things, then you haven't done your job as a applied behavior, for applied behavior analysis. You have to go ahead and get that generativity into what you're doing there. So I think that's probably my biggest myth. Between that and that, there's no, I mean, this is another kind of one for me. I tend to be like one of the only men RBTs, or male RBTs.
Yeah, there's very few.
Yeah, it's a very, you know, female dominated profession. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. This isn't me going, women.
There needs to be more, whatever it is. It's just what it is. So
there needs to be more dudes everywhere. No, I just know that there's a lot of issues surrounding being a man in the position, and I've come across it at work. And again, this isn't me going, oh man, I've got it so hard as a white dude. This isn't me just saying, like, this is what I've noticed. And like, I've had people come up to me and like stop me when I'm doing work out in public with my kids, and those people will be like talking to those kids and say, hey, do you know this person?
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. I've had people do that. I've had, that one clinic that I was talking about that I worked at for 2 years, I took one of my kids often to a grocery store, and so after being stopped twice, I asked my clinic, like, hey, can you please make, like, a t-shirt or something to let people know that, like, I'm at work, and I'll wear, like, a name badge or something to let people know what's going on. But yeah, no, I've been stopped a few times, and people will be like, hey, this kid doesn't look like they belong with you. Is everything okay, child? And then I'll have to explain, like, no, this is my job, this is what I'm doing, I'm at work right now. So that's one of the things that's happened to me, and so I want to extend it to anyone who might be a man looking to do behavioral therapy, because it's a super fulfilling career regardless of your gender. So I would
I would have never thought that happened. I didn't think of that side. It's funny because I've been thinking of the opposite, that men are valued. It's just not, men are valued to be RBTs in the field, or even BCBAs, whatever it is. There's not enough men in the field, and when there is someone who arrives, it is kind of like finding a unicorn a little bit. Not really, but like, it's not like that rare, but men, like, if you have male RBTs, they can handle older kids, especially ones who are aggressive. And so if there's not many of them, then you can't take on those clients. So I know typically, like, men will get higher pay because they will handle those cases. So things like that.
I'll go ahead and extend, like, if if you want to go ahead and work with 17-year-old dude who's buff and aggressive, I would let you work too. You could go ahead and do it, I promise. But yeah, no, I mean, I've worked with cases that my female coworkers will be like, yeah, I'm not comfortable working in this case. And it's funny, you know, just there's actually a big gender thing for this field, because you know, so I think it's like a male is 4 times more likely to have autism than a female.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in our work, a lot of our clients are boys. They're, you know, young men. And I think of the distribution of, okay, we have so many male clients that are being worked by female RBTs and BCBAs, and then we don't have nearly enough female clients to be like, oh, I don't think I've ever had a female client that didn't have access to a female RBT, you know, but male clients all the time don't have access to male RPTs for that kind of one-to-one gender recognition.
Yeah, that's true.
One of the other, you know, things about the field is that you'll often find that just you won't understand a client based on their gender, because you just didn't grow up that way. You didn't grow up the same way that they do. So this isn't me going, you guys need to be more open or anything like that, but it's really hard to understand, like, why a 14-year-old boy with autism does so many different things, and you gotta kind of figure out, okay, well, how much of that is because of biology and how much of that is autism?
Yeah. So, but also I was thinking too that how much of it is socialization, because oftentimes girls are taught to be more social than boys, and it's often, it may be like overlooked, oh, well, he's just shy, like, you can't tell because, well, you didn't really raise him to be super social.
Yeah. I'm talking more about, so, like, I've got teenage male clients, and they all have, well, not they all have, but they've had, you know, like, masturbatory issues, and just kind of doing it at inappropriate times. And so I remember very specifically, I had a case with one of my favorite clients of all time. He was a 14-year-old nonverbal, loved this kid. He had 2 RBTs on his case. He had me, and he had this young, pretty woman RBT. And what we would see is that with me, he didn't have any sort of, like, stripping behaviors or kind of, like, touching himself, essentially, in inappropriate ways when he was hanging out with me. But when he was working with her, he was, you know, a lot less controlled. And he had, like, so many kind of just indecent behaviors around her. And so what ended up happening was that I ended up taking more and more of her hours to go ahead and work with him and get him to kind of understand, like, okay, hey, when we're at work like this, we can't just be pulling off our pants. We gotta, you know, respect their autonomy and, you know, be respectful of everyone around. And then eventually they were able to generalize, you know, me and her as, okay, hey, these people are both of my teachers. I can't just be trying to do indecent things just because she's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important to go ahead and figure out, okay, well, why does he act like this, or why do boys act like this, versus why do my girl clients not do that? So I don't even remember what the original question was. I'm sorry. I was kind of just thinking about the importance of having representation in the field. So it's not even just male and female. I think just cultural backgrounds and everything are super important too. I would highly encourage people who have these different cultural backgrounds to join. ABA has such a high demand for different languages and different cultures as well, to go ahead and start making it easier for whole communities to join into it. So
yeah, it's definitely not just one gender or one race or one culture that has these symptoms, that has a kid with autism in their family. So having more of a diverse staff helps with it.
For sure.
So, let's see, next question. What advice would you give someone wanting to pursue being a BCBA?
All right, and I'll try to keep this a little bit more brief, because I know we've been going for quite a while for this interview. Someone who wants to be an RBT or a BCBA?
Mm-hmm. A BCBA. Or maybe an RBT, just, I guess, just you can pick one.
People who want to get into the field?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, if you want to get into the field, an RBT is a totally great way to start it. I would highly recommend being an RBT just for a while before you jump into being a BCBA. I had a coworker who got her RBT and less than a month later signed up to for her master's to go ahead and become a BCBA. She had never done ABA before, and so this 1 month was all the practice that she had, and she ended up dropping out of her master's degree and leaving the clinic because she was like, huh, you know what? I don't care for doing this anymore, and just left. And I'm like, wow, you threw away so much on essentially a gamble. So getting into an RBT role is super easy. There's always demand for it, and you can go ahead and find it. I would say just go ahead and do it if you find that you want to help out people and work in that kind of world. And then if you want to become a BCBA, well, then stick around for, I mean, honestly, I'd say like a year would probably be my best recommendation. Like, be an RBT for a year. And if you can do it for a year, then think, okay, do I want to be more in charge of a lot more cases and be able to influence the way that those work? And if so, then consider going for your master's and doing it. You know, for me, it's been a very fulfilling master's program. I've enjoyed my work. I've been able to keep my job while going to school. It's been a good experience for me. I mean, that's my recommendation. If you, and it's all centered on being an RBT. If you like being an RBT, then chances are you'll like being a BCBA. So
yeah, and I feel like RBTs go through the five stages of grief a little bit, or they just go through these stages where you know, you're first new, and then you think things are going well, and then something happens and you're like, whoa, like, do I still want to stay in here, you know? And you go through like a learning curve, because you realize you're missing so many different things. Like, at least that was for my experience. Just I was told by my first year, like, somebody had told the boss that I'm not a good fit for the field of ABA. And I've been doing this for 5 years now, 6 years now. So, I mean, I think that says a lot that you can grow from it if you are willing to stick through it and learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a, you've got to be able to stick through it if you're going to want to be in this career.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. So I guess the last thing is, what are the best resources that have helped you along the way?
My best resources have honestly been more just like mentors. The things that help me out most are BCBAs who are willing to just talk about the career. I remember the first thing that I wanted to seriously look at becoming a BCBA, I wrote up, it was like a list of like 20 questions, and I sent it to one of my supervisors, and she got, like, I sent it to her in text, and she was like, okay, 1 second, I'm gonna write you like a Word document to answer these questions. And then she emailed it back to me, and it was like a good 2 pages of replies. But that was like one of the big things that made me decide to go into that line of work. And I asked her, like, how long did it take for her to do school, and what was her current pay, and what was her current workload like? And she was very transparent and honest about everything. And so that's been kind of my biggest resource. So there was, I mean, that was this BCBA, Hillary. I feel fine talking about them on a first name basis here. So that was Hillary. The interior design BCBA that I really respected, Shannon, she did really well. I've worked with two male BCBAs now, who have helped shape me immensely, and that's really been it. You know, I don't do a lot of research. I don't do a lot of just straight up reading articles and doing those kinds of stuff, because I'd much rather be hands on and get in and see about what I can change with, you know, the fundamentals that I have. So that's that'll be my last kind of big hill that I'm ready to die on. That I think
now it's all like research in school and everything.
Exactly, yeah. You've heard it from me a million times. So yeah, exactly. Is that it's all just research, and now I'd much rather go ahead and get out there and do the experiments and run the variables and stuff like that, rather than read about people who have done it in a controlled lab setting.
I think it's good to have both, to learn from both. You can learn, you know, in the books, and you can learn in person. There's some things that you don't necessarily want to experience, so you just rather read about it. But that's it. You have anything else to add?
No, thank you for coming up with these questions. I know I probably talked for quite a bit longer, but hopefully anyone who is interested in the field of ABA, anyone who listens to this, can go ahead and get a real idea of what it's like to be one of us.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to really answer out these questions. I really appreciate it.
All right, well, for ABA Soup, I'm Joshua Rivera.
And I'm Charlene Chang. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you listening and hanging out with us, and we'll see you in the next episode.